Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. You have been listening to Miss Ricky Lee Jones, Danny's all-star joint. Ricky was a guest on our show not too long ago, and we just can't get enough of Ricky Lee Jones. She's on tour right now in the United States, and she'll be back soon, and hopefully she'll come by and tell us all hello. And we have a really, really great guest tonight. His name is Mark Schwartz, and he is a poet in North Beach in San Francisco. North Beach is in San Francisco, and Mark is a very, very unique poet. I can't wait to bring him up. He has written, I think, about 13 books, and he has. It has been said by Jack Hirschman, who is a well-known poet in the Bay Area, and worldwide. Jack Hirschman said that Mark writes naked poems, absurdly naked poems, whatever that means. And we're going to find out tonight. We're going to get him to tell us, what is a naked poem, Mark? And by the way, I am opening my chat room, so if anyone wants to come and chat, feel free. And the call-in number, if you would like to talk to Mark at some point during the program, I want you to feel absolutely free. So the number is 347-326-9915. 347-326-9915. And I want to promise everybody, tonight I'll remember to hang up the phone, and you won't hear me typing away for the next 2 hours. Sometimes, you know, I don't realize that the shows go on longer, even though they're not scheduled to. And so there have been times that you could hear me typing and mumbling to myself. But no, I won't. Tonight I'm hanging up the receiver. Anyway, let's go ahead and bring Mark on where he can tell us all about his his life as a North Beach poet. And without anything else said, all right, let me see if he's on. Hello.
Hello there. Are you there?
I am. And you're there. How are you, Mark?
Very well, very well. Thank you for having me on the show, Joy.
Well, thank you for being here. I'm just delighted. I couldn't say enough about you, and yet I'm not saying the right things. I think you can tell us more about yourself, huh, Mark?
Well, I hope so. I guess let me begin with the bare minimum necessities of North Beach. I just had the experience of being permanently 86 from specs, being thrown out of city lights until five workers got enthusiastic about me submitting a resume, which I did yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been 86 from Cafe Trieste, which are the three cornerstones of North Beach.
Oh.
But I am basically one vote away from getting back into the Cafe Trieste.
Right.
And I feel I'm on good terms with City Lights and Cafe Trieste, and there's a quagmire going on at Specs. That's all I can say.
Wow. Now, see, the places that Mark has mentioned, I'm sure many people have heard of City Lights. City Lights Books, famous bookstore, and then Cafe Trieste, and then Specs, did you say? I'm not familiar. Is that like a restaurant?
No, Specs is a bar. It's one of the only four union bars in all of San Francisco, even though there is a very strong local, too.
Okay.
The workers there are all union members. I love all the bartenders at Specs. It's been my stomping ground since 1983.
And so they threw you out of Specs, Cafe Trieste, and City Lights. Now, could I ask
you? Yes, as of about a week ago, yes.
Why did they do that, Mark?
Well, I see. Which one do you want to begin with first?
Let's start with City Lights.
Well, City Lights, it was July 4th. I was reading one of Diane DePrima's books and also reading about the Haight-Ashbury years, and I decided to walk out with the books. Strangely enough, the buzzer went off.
Oh.
So I returned the book. Yes, the buzzer went off. I was caught stealing two books from City Lights.
Well, were you trying to do that, Mark?
Well, I was trying to sneak them out, yes.
You were trying to
sneak them out, that's right.
Oh, well, that's not, I don't know what to say. I mean,
Well, the next day I called up Tan, who was the one that caught me, and I was in tears. And finally, when she realized that because I've been really upstairs at the City Lights, as a lot of people might know around the world, pushing the books, pushing my books, pushing the Beat books. And, so I was doing the work for free at City Lights. And finally, I hit Tan with the idea. I even was willing to pay for the books, but I've had books at City Lights, my own books being sold at City Lights. But finally, when I hit Tam with the idea of me submitting a resume, she became delighted and excited. Four more workers are very happy with my fact that I have a resume, and so I'm hoping to be hired by this guy named Andy, who does the sole hiring, because I need a job, quite frankly. I mean, if I had a job, I wouldn't have to go through all these damn shenanigans, which is forced me out of. You know what I mean?
You have to steal books. Here, Mark is. And you've got your own book there at City Lights. Is that right, Mark?
Yeah, well, Lawrence Ferlinghetti put my book, which I'll read from tonight, on 3rd Street, Jack Kerouac Visited. Lawrence put it in the window at City Lights. It lasted only 3 days before it was sold out. That book, Matt Gonzalez, who's running for vice president with Ralph Nader at the head of the ticket, Matt gave me $95 to put up printing 50 copies of the book. He didn't want credit, but I gave him credit anyway because I'm not going to have a book that doesn't have Matt Gonzalez's name in it. So there is one book left at City Lights right now, and I'm hoping once I get back in the store working there, I'll be able to not only have my books here, other books, one of the books, Poetess and Combos, which I'm going to be first reading from. So I'll also be able to maybe order books. I hope to order Dan Berrigan works to be at City Lights as an example.
Let me ask you, Mark, could you tell the listeners around the world what is the Beat Museum? I know what it is, you know what it is, but a lot of people don't know.
Very good. Well, the Beat Museum was put together by a man named Jerry Cimino, C-I-M-I-N-O, and it was the idea of idolizing the Beats and selling all the paraphernalia. There are great books there of the Beats. There's a room upstairs. Which is like a little museum with music playing. There's a theater in which you can see the latest videos about the Beats. Yes, Beats poets would include Allen Ginsberg, Jack Kerouac, Bob Kaufman, Gregory Corso, Jack Michelin, and that's just the men. There are a lot of great women beats.
Women as well. And who, did you know any of those people, Mark?
Yes, I knew Alan, I knew Gregory, I knew Jack Michelin.
You knew Alan Ginsberg, Gregory
Gregory Corso and Jack Michelin, yes. And Bob Kaufman, of course, Bob Kaufman.
Oh, Bob Kaufman. And so these are the famous beat poets people. They actually have in the Smithsonian Institute a whole, I think it's the Portrait Institute, Portrait Museum in Washington, D.C. They have a whole place there for the beat poets. I don't know if you're aware of that.
No, but I did send to the U.S. Postal Service a list of 8 male beat poets who should be on postage stamps, and I included Philip LaMontagne as one of them.
Who?
Philip LaMontagne. He was a surrealistic poet published in 1954, I believe. Maybe by André Breton of France, an absurdist surrealist.
So right there, okay, here's City Lights. If y'all are getting the picture, the listeners out there, North Beach is a little community inside San Francisco, which is has many different communities, and it has been traditionally a lot of cafes run by Italian families. Is that right, Mark?
That's correct.
And so that is where the beat poets actually lived and did their poetry, a lot of it.
That's right. Let me tell you something. You know, Lawrence Ferlinghetti, in 1988, put aside before the Board of Supervisors the naming of 12 streets of the writers, including William Saroyan Alley, which is outside of specs. Now, listen, I'm running for Board of Supervisors in my district. If I become mayor, I plan on changing the name of Columbus Avenue to Allen Ginsberg Boulevard.
Yay! Woo! Well, they already have that one little alley there by City Lights. What's
Jack
the name
Kerouac
of
Alley. Jack Kerouac, yeah.
Jack Kerouac. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. So Mark is talking about, now, do you have anything in the Beat Museum?
I have two books there. Yeah. I have two books, yeah.
What's the titles, Mark?
On 3rd Street, Jack Kerouac Visited, and I also have A Picture is Worth 62 Words.
A Picture is Worth 62 Words. And now, we discussed this partly, but how can people find your books, Mark?
Well, aside from City Lights and the Beat Museum, I recommend giving me a call at 415-267-3904, and I'll repeat that number at the end of the program.
Thank you.
Can give me a message, like I can even list all my books, or just give me your name and phone number so I can call you back and talk with you about the books and how you can acquire them.
Because Mark, you do not have a computer, am I right?
That is correct, but I do use. I hate the computer. I'd rather be on the phone than on the computer.
On the computer.
I'd rather be in a bar in a coffee shop than on the computer.
No, I understand. But people can look up City Lights, and they can look up the Beat Museum.
Yeah. In fact, let me give you the phone number of the City Lights. This would really help me get back in the bookstore.
Right.
This way you can order my book, and that kind of popularity will force them to rehire me. The City Lights phone number to order any of my books, and one of my books, by the way, I recommend, is a book called And Now Then, my first bound book put out by Beatitudes Press. Recommend that book as fables from the 80s. And the City Lights phone number, let's see if I can find it.
Well, they can always look it online, too.
You're right, but let me give it anyway.
All right.
It's 415-362-8193. Order A Picture's Worth 62 Words, and Now Then, you'll be delighted.
Mark, I'm just really tempted to ask you, could you tell us a little bit about the beat poets? I mean, you have a perspective of something, you knew some personally, and a lot of people didn't and never, they never had that chance. So what was it that was, what put them in history like that?
Well, it all began with Allen Ginsberg, the Sixth Gallery reading. That's where Allen Ginsberg debuted his Howl, a fantastic poem that Lawrence Ferlinghetti had published. In fact, he had published it by having heard about the reading, and he wrote Alan a telegram saying, "May I have the manuscript?"
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out the books were confiscated because somebody felt the books were obscene. I don't know what we can say over the airwaves. If you want to, I can take a chance. One of the words like cocksucking and motherfucking, even though there were asterisks.
Yeah, it's a really absurd.
George Carlin just died,
And
our Supreme Court voted 5-4 against saying these words, which is an infraction of freedom of speech around the world.
That's right. Well, it's always good to know. So many people have read a lot of Alex Ginsberg's stuff. I guess he was actually the most famous beat poet Or at least
I believe
the
so.
One that comes to mind.
Definitely so.
What?
But Bob Kaufman was not bad himself.
Bob was a
union organizer out of New York. He turned out he was a black Jew. And because of a black Jew, I don't know how the breakdown went. I didn't know his parents. I never met his parents. But anyway, because he was a black Jew and discrimination happening in the 50s, and because he did radical things like scout poetry on top of cars, the police beat him up 87 times.
Oh, my God. What?
There used to be, Bob Kaufman was beat up about 87 times by the police in North Beach.
No way.
Bob, Bob held court at a place called the Coexistence Bagel Shop. And when he was in jail, there was a passing of the hat to get Bob out of jail.
Hmm. I hope they got him. Well, they did get him out. They must have got him out. Well, he had a hard time then. He didn't have such an easy time being a beat poet.
He was called the Rimbaud of beat poetry. By the French. The French idolized Bob Kaufman. Bob only wrote 3 books in his entire life.
Oh.
Only 3 books, and yet he's really well known. Probably one of the quintessential beat poets in the history of the country.
I didn't have any idea. He just wrote 3. I want to ask you, though, going back to you being thrown out of these, why were you, now, Cafe Therese, I want to let people know a little bit about that. I mean, we're talking about a place from, it's like this little cafe, but it's much more than a coffee shop. I mean, there are so many people that are famous, actually, that hang out there and have hung out there. And it's a very small place. I've been in
there.
Well,
fame is a matter of degree.
But why did they throw you out, Mark?
Well, okay, first let me say the Cafe Therese is the political center of the universe. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, I didn't know it was political.
Now, the reason I was thrown out involves like a 3 or 4 different faction of reasons. The first was that, as usual, I have no money. So I went to the outside of the cafe, I asked an acquaintance, may I have a couple of dollars? The person laughed in front of my face. The next person, another acquaintance, I said, could I have a quarter? The person laughed in front of my face.
Laugh.
But what I did is I overturned the San Francisco Chronicle station, hoping the quarters would start piling out. when that happened, one of the workers went out and said, that's it, you're 86, as if the street had anything to do with the coffee shop.
Okay, get it. So needed a cup of coffee. Nobody would give you a quarter or a dime, and so you went out just like Ricky Lee's, Danny's all joint. You know, everybody's asking for a nickel or a dime, but you couldn't get anything, so you went outside, you knocked over the newsstand trying to get
right.
a quarter, and they didn't like that in the Cafe Trias. So they
came
out
really,
so you were.
Well, let me tell you this. What really started, I only found out by a guy named Earl Thibodeau, who's running for supervisor, a great man, who has the lightest definition of class struggle I've ever heard. Anyway, El Salvador mentioned that what really started the 86 thing was when I ate the bagel and cream cheese of the worker.
What do you mean?
Well, it was on the counter. I went inside, I ate the bagel and cream cheese. It wasn't my bagel and cream cheese.
Else's.
It was somebody else's bagel and cream cheese.
Oh, my God.
That's what started the whole thing, yes.
I guess that would. If they know you, Mark, you've been going in there a while, you think they'd offer you a bagel, a cup of coffee, or...
No, well, actually, it's Ida, I love Ida. Ida is the granddaughter of the owner, and she has her own little shop called Cafe Ida. I saw her today, and she's going to give me the word whether I can come back in or not. Actually, the workers voted at first. They went down to a vote. I lost the first vote, 2-6. But then I talked to a couple of the workers, so then it was 4-4. I even offered Ida to supply them with a couple more workers so I can really fix the vote. Ida laughed at that. And so Ida's the deciding vote, and I expect to be in the Cafe Trias once again very soon.
Yay! Okay, we'll all vote for Mark to get back in the Cafe Trias, and hopefully they can offer him a cup of coffee now and again, because he said he doesn't have money. I believe him. Or after tonight, you might...
By the way, right now, I'm down to my last $16, so start calling.
Call the Cafe Trias. Tell them to let him back in.
No. Call me up to order my books. I need the money. Call me. Call my number. Call City Lights. Order the books. Let's get on good standing.
Let's give your number again right now. We're going to give it a couple... Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, 415-267-3904.
415-267-3904. That's Mark Schwartz. And really and truly, that's like his website, because he does not own a computer, folks. He's one of those that he just doesn't. But that's okay, because you can get in touch with him. You can go ahead and get a book or two from him. And they're not expensive, are they, Mark?
Could I mention prices over the airwaves?
Yes.
Okay, the in print books are anywhere between $5 and $10, but the out of print books are anywhere between $40 and $295.
What?
That's right.
Oh my God.
I can go into that too. Yes,
oh
the high
God.
price I can. I'm going to tell you why there's high price books.
Yeah, why are they so? They're a little high.
Okay, two of my books, Haikus to Fool With,
mm-hmm.
and my book, A Picture's Worth 62 Words, which had been published by Benway Institute Studios, former love acquaintance of mine, a love affair of mine, even though the love affair just meant holding hands and kissing once. That was the love affair.
Oh.
And the publisher wanted me to not give my, she would give me the books if I didn't give them away free. And when I was at the book signing, I started giving away the books free. So the publisher picked up all the books and started walking out until a comrade of mine said, "Look, Mark, she's walking out with the books." So I went. I followed her to her motorcycle, biped or moped or whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
And I said, "Okay, I'll buy the damn books." So I bought each of the books $1 a piece. Then what she wanted to make my books into hardcover.
Sure.
And each book sold for like $5, $10 or so, $5, I think.
Yeah.
I forget what the price was. But she wanted me, out of the $5, to give her back $3 so it would go to hardcover around the country. And I told her, no, I needed that money for travel. So that
oh,
was
I
the...
See.
You
needed
was the extent,
money right then.
I could have been really nationally known with this beautiful woman, who I love dearly, but I was arrogant and I said I needed the money and I didn't think of the higher.
Well,
I didn't think of. I did not think of the higher good. And besides,
you
know,
are you Italian? Are you Italian?
No, I'm not. But the major point of this is why be under a contract to a woman? I would, you know, I'm so used to being under contract to men. I'm so used to being under contract to men. I cannot see being under a contract to a woman, you know.
Why is that, Mark? You're not.
I just want to be independent. I want to be independent. I would rather use the money for travel. I want to be out, not tied.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
Would you care to be under a contract with a male, or?
No, I don't want to be under a contract with a male, but with men, like comrades, you know, for the most part.
They're comrades.
Especially,
now, wait a minute, Mark.
Yeah.
We're in
yeah.
San Francisco. This is a city of equality, right?
Right.
Well, somehow you don't fit.
No, well, I go with the GLBT community over anybody else.
Oh, do you? Are
yes.
you? Well, I won't ask, but I mean.
I have a song. Let me sing my song. Although this may bring a lawsuit, so I better be careful about this. But
right.
I am playing. Okay, this is a song that was copywritten probably in the 60s. So do we have domain?
Go right ahead.
Schwartz's by bum 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 bum. Schwartz's by. Bum, 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 how do you know? He is coming by, and he is by. Bye, 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 bye. When you say goodbye, bye, 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 you know he's by, bye. Yeah, I think that all the time.
I know.
I really do.
I wasn't going to ask, but you know, I just had to. Now I know. Mark, would you happen to have one? Appointment this particular mummy you'd like to share with everyone that might be listening tonight?
Yes, I do have one. Yes,
okay,
I'm glad you mentioned that. Okay, let me dig it out.
Mark is going to give us a poem, and I'm so glad because, you know, we're not always going to have Mark around to listen, and the way he gets, you know, 86 is it called? I'm not quite sure I'm familiar with numbers.
Yeah.
Thrown out of every place. He may not be around long. And I'm telling you, this guy is so special. I've heard him. Actually, I did hear Mark read a poem. He was hosting a poetry reading in one of the little cafes, and it's been several years. But he was quite good. And I thought, wow, you know, he has a lot of expression. And, you know, I didn't know you got thrown out of places, but you know what? Everybody has their calling.
That's right. Well, here is a dream. This is from on 3rd Street, Jack Cackle Visited. Appropriate for this time of day, and I'll explain the politics of it in a moment. Dream 083103. I had a dream where I was being controlled by intelligence. But in the end, I was able to convince intelligence that worked on my case to go south, north, east, as everything begins in San Francisco. And begin a crusade against the president, Bush, for him to stop all his war efforts, and that these men and women and transgenders would receive the highest priority jobs under a Mark Schwartz presidency.
Hmm. Mark Schwartz for president. So you're getting ready. Oh.
I'm getting ready. I'm running as supervisor first. Yep, right now I see the tickets going on. It'll be an Obama-Kennedy ticket because Kennedy's regime should come back in. It's better to die as vice president, although I think Ted has been given 16 years ago. So Ted Kennedy could be president after Obama. And after that, Clinton... And maybe I won't make it, but at least I'll be mayor of San Francisco and I'll be happy.
You'll be happy.
Maybe I'll make it to the Senate. You know, I could make it to the Senate.
You could.
By the way, I'm a Green Party member right now, but I believe you should be able to join more than one party. John V. Lindsay, when I was in New York, John V. Lindsay received both the liberal and the Republican nominations, and that's the way it should be.
Mark, now what book is that poem you read us? Where?
Okay, this is On Third Street, Jack Calhoun visited. Let me read some of the blurbs.
All right.
I got blurbs from Noam Chomsky. Noam Chomsky, the great critic of American government, wrote for one of those rare moments of tranquility.
Rare moments of tranquility. Okay.
Tranquility, that's right. Now, Bruce
right.
DeGray.
Well, I was remembering in the portrait reading I went to that you were at, it was at a cafe in Boheme. Is there a Cafe Boheme or am I not?
Yeah, Cafe Boheme on
24th
Street. That's right.
In North Beach. And there was a woman that got up and read a poem. And actually, I think she was one of the dancers at one of the strip joints around the corner. And
yeah.
It was really amazing because she did a dance. She read this poem. And I thought, wow, I have never been to an X-rated poetry reading before. Now, and, you know, it was very unique. Mark is unique. So, Mark, are you running a poetry thing right now, any kind of a place?
Right, well, I would like to go back to politics. I think politics is a very important issue in this nation right now. And it's important that but I will explain that I am running with Daniel and Jennifer Barone, who's a team that usually does Club Deluxe in the Haight-Ashbury the first Tuesday every month, where it's jazz and poetry. About a month ago, on 3 days' notice, we got 50 people showing up for jazz and poetry. And Daniel, at the end of the whole show, Daniel laid a 20 on me. So I felt very happy about it.
I bet you were. Well, you know, that was really nice. I mean, you know, it's good to have people that, you know, friends that have money that will lend. A lot of poets have been known throughout history to just really not have much, you know, green cash. And I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
Maybe because poetry is something that usually happens, or they become known poets after they travel on. Right, Mark? A lot of poets have to be very hardy souls in that often poetry is something that's ahead of its time. I mean, I really don't know. I'm kind of, you know, trying to find out why is it a lot of poets don't have money. Can you explain that, Mark?
Well, I think it's basically because there's so much money tied in with the military budget. There isn't enough money for culture, for health, education. And I want to read this, but let me read another poem that strikes this.
All right, go right ahead.
Okay. It's from Poetwits and Combos, which is my all-time bestseller. It only goes for $5. And it goes, What I Really Want for Christmas, 1998. And it's still relevant today. It's written with Garth Ferguson, a gay friend of mine who lives in the building that I live in, and Jack Hirschman. Here we go. Encampments of homeless on formerly state and federal land. Communes where private property used to be. The manufacturer of everything. A home for everyone. A general strike on Christmas Day. A true education and health care for all. Then every day would be Christmas.
Well, that's beautiful. One of my deepest concerns is the homeless, and Jack Hirschman actually donated a book to a fundraiser we did and called Join Hearts and Hands, Making Homelessness History. And I did meet Jack at City Lights Bookstore, and it's funny because he walked out with one of his own books. Now, no alarm went off, but I did wonder about that, actually. Mark, why didn't the alarm go off? He did not pay for that book.
Personally, I know all these alarms, I mean, we're living in a situation where, as the Supreme Court decided in Roe versus Wade, that activity, intelligence, and awareness is based on the e-waves. So it's my sincere belief the technology has gotten to the point that it's aware of the e-waves, and somehow when you're going out through, it's either the e-waves or the pressing a button knowing that you're guilty. One of the two.
One of the two. Well, he was not guilty. And, you know, I took the book, and I thank Jack Hirschman. Jack Hirschman, again, is a probably world-known poet. Would you say, Mark, not just...
Well, actually, Jack is the first communist poet to be appointed poet laureate anywhere around the world, at least in this country. Maybe not around the world, but at least in this country.
Yeah, and he's the poet laureate of San Francisco.
That's right. Up until October. And by the way, I've talked with Gavin Newsom, who's the mayor, who's going to be running for governor, and not that I support him, but he knows that he's to appoint Diane DePrima as our next poet laureate, and then Neely Tchaikovsky.
Who?
Neely Tchaikovsky.
Well, you know, a friend of yours, Philip Hackett, said that you
yes.
were going to be the next poet laureate.
Well, that's interesting. I won't go into the deal I made with the last guy that was thinking of running.
You made a
but
deal.
But if Ross Mercurimi becomes mayor in 2011, I will definitely be poet laureate. Although I may be supervisor.
Wait a minute, you're not supposed to become poet laureate that way. I thought it was a little bit more above the board. I didn't know you made deals. Not for poet laureate. Come on. Let us have our idealistic beliefs. You know, I thought poet laureates were way up there, but that's okay. Well, who is the poet laureate of California right now? Do you know?
Yes, it's Al Young, who just got reappointed
oh, yeah.
by Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who doesn't
Hello.
Remember Tookie. He doesn't remember Tookie. Let's remember Tookie, people.
Yeah, let's don't forget Tookie. That's quite a thing there. Mark, would you like to tell people maybe a little bit about yourself? Because, you know, people will be downloading the show for gosh knows how long, many, many years, and they're going to go, wait a minute, she's just ask a person we're not quite sure we know. Would you like
yeah.
to share a little bit about your background and what
yes.
brought you to North Beach?
Well, no, I'd rather go into what brought me to poetry, and it's more important
yeah.
than North Beach.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, well, I actually began in college. I had a girlfriend and you know, I loved and then broke up with because I wanted to go out with somebody else, and then another girlfriend who didn't want me to sleep with her and wound up letting me sleep with her, and then an idealistic girlfriend who was a very creative soul who I dug a lot. So when I sort of had broken up with all three of them, I was by myself and I wrote a poem, which I wish I had in front of me. It's my best poem ever written.
Mm.
And I should have dug it out, but I wasn't thinking that it would be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And I submitted it to the Risley Review or Journal. I forget what it was called.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the assistant editor, a beautiful friend who I thought was bisexual. Actually, it turned out later he was, or is, not really, he's a heterosexual guy, but, you know, just open to, you know, sensitivity of touch, and a little bit, although homophobic about it, too. But anyway, he was the assistant editor of the journal, and I asked him, well, are you going to publish my poem? He goes, which one was yours? I go, well, I said it anonymously, and I mentioned the line, which is something like mesmerizing eyes, cat's eyes, mesmerizing cat's eyes, something like that. I've longed for the creative soul with mesmerizing cat eyes. Twice you've been a long, silky dancer, emitting waves of warmth and comfort. So that's how the poem began. And he goes, well, we thought it was somebody else. And then he goes to me, if you submit your name to it, we'll publish it.
Huh.
So I bit the bullet. It got published. And would you believe it, the three chicks that I split up with all began speaking to me again.
After you pulled it, well, yeah, because then you were somebody. You've got your name in print, which is a
no,
very
no, it wasn't strong. That. That was not it. It's just that I immortalized them by writing about them.
Oh, about them. Oh, okay. Well, you know, that's a good thing, right? That's one way to get the women. Just write about them in a poem if it comes through you like that. So then you knew you were a poet, right? You weren't, like, doing this at 2 years old, 3 years old.
No. This was at... This was like junior in college.
This
was 73. I was 19 at the time, I believe.
You were a late bloomer.
Late bloomer. Actually, in first grade, I was a lousy reader. You know, I had the purple, like Baltic Sea reading level. You know, and I was really difficult. Yeah, and then believe it or not, this is great news. I skipped a couple of grades, and in sixth grade, they put me back because of my English. So I was the brightest kid in math in the class. But my English was really poor, and then there was an exam to go into special progress classes, which I had bombed out in English, but my teacher, sixth grade teacher, who recognized my genius in math, said, let them take the exam again without any time pressure and the ability to ask questions. So I had that freedom of and liberty and relaxation so that I was able to do the exam in a relaxed way, and I passed with flying colors. Went into the special progress class, missed eighth grade, went into ninth grade, and then I went to Dewey Clinton High School, which is where Jack Hirschman went, and James Baldwin.
Where is the high school located?
In the Bronx.
In the Bronx. And Jack went there, and who else?
Yes, James Baldwin.
Oh, my goodness. So you were very, very, very advanced in math, But and you like to ask questions, and if anything was stifled, like you wanted to be free to ask questions, but if you were, you were able to really sail, go right through the test.
Well, let me go on a little bit with my career here. Thank you. I was in the Forum Free Press in high school.
Okay.
And that was where the mimeograph machine was going on, and Steve Gilman shoved in front of my face, Kaddish by Allen Ginsberg. Meanwhile, on that Forum Free Press, there was a sketch of Nixon, and Robert Mayer wrote in little tiny print all over that sketch, "Fuck Nixon." Because of that, my high school teacher forced me and Norman Whitetuck to rip up all those Forum Free Presses.
Oh my God!
And then later on, it turns out I had applied to Cornell, and in 1969, Cornell's student union was taken over by black militants, throwing out all the parents. And taking over the radio station. After a number of days of this takeover, the front cover of the New York Times showed Tom Jones with a laden rifle and bullets across his chest. My high school teacher goes to me, "This is why you don't want to go to Cornell." And I went to him, "This is exactly why I do want to go to Cornell."
That's exactly why you do. And you went to Cornell?
Yes.
Oh. So what happened in Cornell? What helped mold you to become the poet you are today?
I already mentioned that.
Oh, okay.
The poem about mesmerizing cat's eyes, the three girls lit up. You know.
Okay. Well, you know, Mark, the thing about people like you is like you have this life that's so in the here and now, it's hard to really want to go back and ask about you. But I do know people always want to find out. They want to know, you know, what is it that, like, they may write poems and they may write, you know, or one or two or whatever. But they don't, they're afraid. Maybe, I don't know, what keeps them from going out and reading at a poetry reading or putting a book together or whatever. I mean, what would you say to someone out there that's like a poet and they feel they're a poet, they've got some poems, but,
yep.
I mean, what would get them going?
That's good. Josh Wolf asked me that same question, and he ran for mayor, and is actually a well-known journalist who spent time in jail for not revealing sources. I like Joshua. I just talked to Joshua before I came on the air. Anyway, so the answer that I give to Josh, which I'll give here, is that you know, poets need to be encouraged. You know, a lot of times somebody will write something, but they need to be encouraged to write more, and then they really need to be encouraged to stand in front of an audience and to read. And what I tell poets is, hey, you need the feedback. See how it goes.
Oh,
see who talks to you afterwards. It's a whole socialization process. Which is what we're all about, you know, which is what is needed to bring the shy person, the isolator, the person writing and writing and writing, to bring that person out, to let that person bloom, by encouragement, to have their poems read in front of an audience.
Well, what about the people that are afraid of criticism, Mark? I mean, people can be very critical, and poets just starting out, or people that don't even realize they're truly a poet.
Aaron Peskin, Board of the President of Supervisors, gave me a certificate of honor for organizing poetry reading for 10 years in North Beach. And I can tell you from all the readings I've been to, there is never any severe criticism. The poetry community is a very open community, and everybody's welcome into it. We love newcomers.
But now, what about the Emily Dickinson of the world that never really, as far as we know, now I don't know, but maybe someone out there does know, I don't know that she was really involved with the poetry community, but would you say she's really the exception, Mark?
Well, as far as I know, but maybe we should open up to the viewers and see what they know about Emily and maybe...
and if anybody out there wants to call in and talk, by the way, the number is 347-326-9915, 347-326-9915. And I must say, I apologize because I got this in a little bit late as far as getting the show tonight featured. You need to give them 44 hours or 48 hours advance, and I only gave them 5. But that's okay. I know that this show will be heard because it's constantly being downloaded. That's the great thing, Mark. As long as we have the link to the show, anyone around the world can download this show 24/7, and they do, and they will. So I'm really pleased that you don't have to be glued to the computer, and you can do that. As a matter of fact, they're making it possible so you won't have a long-distance fee to call in. You'll be able to plug your microphone into the back of the computer and call in. So there'll be no fee, which to me is mind-boggling. But anyway, they're working on that. 3 months is what they say. So, Mark, what would you like to do in the remaining time we have? I wanted to say that Mark is going to, one more time, give his phone number where you can buy a book from him. So let's do that one more time, Mark.
Well, my voicemail is at 415-543-1285. And since my life is right now, a little stagnant, you can call me at home at 415-543-1285.
1285. And you know, I didn't ask you about one place that threw you out. Specs Bar, why was that?
Very good story. I'll be breaking the news. John Gilardi of the San Francisco Weekly knows this, and he laughs about it. But what happened is I was registering voters, wanting to register voters and wanting to people sign the nomination forms for Cindy Sheehan for Congress, our peace activist,
sure.
Started the whole peace movement again. I asked Specs if I could do that. He said no.
Oh.
I did it anyway, and at the time I was registering the voter and having a good time. Somebody gave me, the guy that I registered gave me $10 to see a Hunter Thompson movie, which I saw yesterday. He bought me a beer, and during that time I dissed the communists. There's a whole round table of communists at the bar, and I dissed all of them. And then the next time I go into the bar, one of the bartenders goes to me and says, "You've been permanently 86 from Specs." I go, "Why?" Because we receive complaints. Now, my contention is that my First Amendment rights had been violated. It had been violated because I was told not to petition people to register to vote, to petition to have Cindy Sheehan on the ballot, and if I diss somebody, it's freedom of speech. It may be irritating, it may be annoying, but it's still freedom of speech.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. So you were thrown out from the three places, Specs and City Lights and Cafe Therese, for three different reasons. Totally different. Yeah.
Right. Totally
maybe
different.
It was
thing.
Interesting.
Right.
You know, it is strange. Why was Jack Hirschman able to walk out with that book and nothing happened? Because I thought to myself, and I called a friend. I said, you know, he just walked out with his own book. Nothing wrong with that. I said maybe they have a some kind of an agreement. That it's all right, but I still thought perhaps he would have offered them some money or you know, would have said, well, I'm walking out with my, but no, you know, just walked out. And I thought, that's interesting.
Right.
We did auction that book off at Join Hearts and Hands, Making Homelessness History. I don't know where everyone that is listening lives, but in our city, San Francisco, there are many, many homeless people, and so it's kind of like you either jump in and say, I care that you're out there, and I care you're eating out of a garbage can, or you look the other way, and I think a lot of the artists in this area kind of care, and we jumped in.
Well, a good example of that is that we have one of our artist friends, a guy named Kulik, who I can't place, but I've been in the community a long time, and he was evicted from his home, probably not paying rent. And he made it to the street and he caught pneumonia and wound up in the hospital. The whole community rallied around, including one of the police officers, the only police officer I like on the entire force, because he buys my books, buys me drinks. He's quoted in the paper saying that this guy needs support. Jack Hirschman's quoted, I think, in the paper too. And so there is a community concern about all of us in North Beach. There's no doubt about that. I think North Beach is the tightest community of artists anywhere around the world.
That's a great thing. And, you know, I know one of the things I read that was kind of iffy, though, about North Beach is how tidy the homeless made sure they were there. And I thought, now would I be tidy if I were homeless? I think I'd be just absolutely raving mad. I mean, you're out on the
Well, I'm not homeless. I'm not homeless, and I'm raving mad.
That's right, Mark, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
But, I mean, people are walking by, and they're not even looking at you, and you're going, I mean, God, what do you expect? Tidiness? Please. You know, it's kind of hard to really understand it all. But, you know, I know people say, well, San Francisco, they come here because the weather's nice. But I think there's other places in the country that have homeless. Don't you, Mark? It's not.
Yeah, but let's talk about the San Francisco homeless. I found that it was in the paper today. There are right now about 6,700 homeless people. One-third of them are homeless veterans. The veterans make up one-third of all the homeless. That really took me by surprise today. And this is a travesty that our country does. It forces people to go into war. They have trauma. They go home. There's no jobs for them, no GI Bill, and they wind up taking to the streets. Good example of this, a man named John Mulligan. John Mulligan wrote Shopping Cart Soldiers about Vietnam vets going back home and pushing the shopping cart. John was a Vietnam veteran. He was a sergeant. His memorial was at Cafe Trieste. Family spoke about the whole military career. I'm an anti-war veteran myself, so I'm really put off by this whole military thing.
Oh, you are.
But I was the first poet to go on to give accolades to John Mulligan.
You were in Vietnam?
No, I was reading a memorial for John Mulligan at the Cafe Trieste.
Oh, at the Cafe. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said you were also in Vietnam.
No. In November 1968, I was looking out the window at my mother. A candlelight ceremony from NYU to Fordham University was passing by. I looked at my mother and said, "That's it. I got to go." I went downstairs. I joined the candlelight ceremony. Held the hand of I was a senior in high school. I held the hand of a freshman at NYU, which I thought was a big thing, you know, an older woman, and that was the beginning of my life.
Wow. Yeah, I had a note from someone that had her brother. He came back from Iraq, and he couldn't get services, you know, through the VA without a lot of red tape, and he actually killed himself in front of her, and she was trying to make sense of it. And I thought, well, how can you make sense of it, you know? It's like, you really can't. There is no sense, you know. I mean, he's over there and then comes back and expects support.
Yeah. Well, the first symbolic acts of the anti-war movement began when there were some Buddhist monks that set themselves in flames in Vietnam. That was the first anti-war statement.
Yes, and then Jane Fonda came right after that, didn't she?
Right. Not only Jane Fonda, but Dan Berrigan. The Berrigan brothers Dan wrote a book called Flight to Hanoi. Which is, I think Tom Hayden might have gone with Dan Berrigan to North Vietnam. I guess it was, I forget the cities now. You know, I don't know what city. I mean, North and South, I'm confused with that. Because this is one Vietnam now. I don't know what is what. You know, Hanoi. That was Hanoi. They went to travel to Hanoi. Yeah.
Well, you know, we had a guest the other night, and she was actually one of the writers of the book Peace Pilgrim. And I don't know, are you familiar with her?
No.
Well, she walked across the United States carrying only a toothbrush and a comb for about 25 years. And her only message was overcome hatred with love, and Peace Pilgrim slept anywhere, and I mean anywhere, unless someone offered her shelter. And she fasted unless someone offered her food.
Right.
But she really felt that soon, Mark, she felt that we would go beyond war. She felt that it was just a matter of time. She thought we were a little young, you know, in the way we were going about things.
Yeah, right.
I hope she's right.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think politically we're not going to be going too far away from war. Obama today mentioned he wants the troops to be home in 2010. This is a major travesty. You know, when Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr. came into office on the first day, they got all the hostages back from Iran. That was day one. There's no reason, because right now the Congress has budgeted war for only 6 months past the inauguration. There's no reason Barack Obama cannot say on January 20th, that's it, the war is over, all the troops come home in 6 months. There's no reason he can't do that.
But he's saying 2010.
2010, that's the bottom line right now.
And you're
saying... The only way to find peace with this garbage going around is to take a step back, to join peace vigils. Right now, every third Friday of the month at Oak, in the panhandle of San Francisco, we have peace vigils. Very nice peace vigils. We play anti-war music in terms of CDs that my friend has put together. And Food Not Bombs is here, so people join and we rejoice in our peacefulness. And that's the only way to get away from this war nonsense. I mean, you know, the only way to get away from the war nonsense is to become spiritual and peaceful. Cindy Sheehan is an amazing woman. I'm really happy to get to know her.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I'm breaking up.
Sorry.
That's right.
Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, is something wrong? I mean...
No. No.
You're just thinking about Cindy and...
Oh, good news. Good news. Listen to this. This is a breaking the news. Cindy Sheehan with Dennis Kucinich and John Conyers are having a press conference tomorrow in Washington, D.C. I think impeachment's coming out. We're going to finally hear the word impeachment with capital I tomorrow at a press conference. Should be in the news in 2 days. That's what I'm hoping for. Cindy Sheehan, Dennis Kucinich, and John Conyers. We're finally going to get that Bush and Cheney into prison. I promise you.
Whoa, you go, Cindy Sheehan. And she is from the Bay Area, isn't she, Mark?
She was born in San Francisco, I think. Let me get the sheet.
Wow.
Let me read about Cindy Sheehan.
Please.
Yeah, hold on. Yeah.
Cindy Sheehan, everyone knows Cindy. I mean, she's been in the news day in and day out. But the fact that she's from this area,
right.
Many, many, many innovative souls are from this area. Not only antiquar or peacemakers or poets or artists, but also your Silicon Valley. I mean, we're talking about an hour from here. Amazing things happen in the Bay Area, and I'm just really honored to be here.
Right.
I don't really know if it's the ocean or the negative eons. I'm just not sure. If someone could, offer
listen to this,
it would be great.
Yeah. Let me read. Cindy Sheehan was born in Englewood, California in 1957 to working-class parents who came of age during the Depression and World War II. Cindy's parents, Shirley and Dennis Miller, met at the Lockheed Martin Corporation, where they both worked during the 1950s. Shirley raised three children, Cindy, her younger sister Dee Dee, and brother Scott, while Dennis worked as an electrician. Cindy attended public school in Bellflower, California. In 1974, Cindy met Patrick Sheehan. The couple married in 1977 in Norwalk, California. In subsequent years, Cindy and Pat Sheehan had four children, Casey, Carly, Andy, and Jane, and settled their family in Vacaville, California. When her youngest child was two, Cindy decided to go back to college to earn her bachelor's degree. She first attended Cerritos College, where she graduated with honors. Thereafter, Cindy transferred to UCLA, where she majored in U.S. history with a concentration in California history. After studying at UCLA, Cindy worked as a youth minister at the St. Mary's Catholic School in Vacaville, California for 8 years, and coordinated an after-school program for an at-risk middle school children in the city of Vacaville. Cindy's world changed forever on April 4, 2004, when her eldest child, Casey Austin, was killed while serving in Iraq. He was 24 years old. Casey, who was a specialist in the 1st Cavalry Unit in Sadr City, was awarded a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star posthumously for his valor in combat. In response to this tragedy, Cindy Sheehan founded the Gold Star Families for Peace in January 2005. This organization, which was comprised of family members who had relatives die as a result of the war, is dedicated to ending the occupation in Iraq and bringing our troops home. In August 2005, Cindy traveled to Crawford, Texas, with the goal of speaking personally to President Bush to demand an end to the occupation of Iraq. Other peace activists joined Cindy's efforts and the demonstrations that came to be known as Camp Casey began. Camp Casey was a regular gathering held whenever Bush was in Crawford, Texas, and drew thousands of activists and celebrated from all over the world to protest the Iraq conflict. And so, Cindy started the whole peace movement again, and let me go on. Between Camp Casey events, Cindy traveled to numerous countries to speak to world leaders about diplomatic resolution to conflicts in the Middle East and Afghanistan. She has met with foreign leaders and legislators from South Korea, Canada, Venezuela, Cuba, the United Kingdom, Spain, Italy, France, Ireland, Egypt, Turkey, Iraq, and Jordan. Cindy Sheehan has received special recognition for her diplomatic missions from the U.S. Congress and the government of South Korea, Scotland, and Canada. Let me go on. Cindy Sheehan has been a keynote speaker and an honored guest at numerous press conferences and organizations around the world. She has received dozens of peace awards and was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2005.
Wow.
So, Cindy is top dog,
Yeah, she'll get it. Eventually, Cindy will get it. I mean, she's nonstop. This is her mission. And I do believe... There's a kind of a political comic. Her name is Stephanie Miller. I don't know if people... But there's StephanieMiller.com, and her father was actually Goldwater's, Barry Goldwater's vice presidential nominee, and he also was, her father was a lawyer.
No, it was Curtis LeMay. Curtis LeMay was the vice president nominee under Goldwater. Curtis LeMay.
Oh, really? Barry
yes.
Goldwater? Well, at one time she said...
Goldwater LeMay, that was the ticket.
Oh.
And Goldwater lost it when he said he would drop the bomb. So who got in? Johnson
well,
got
don't
in,
know.
I guess.
Look up StephanieMiller.com.
And what did Johnson do? Johnson dropped the bomb. So we had a lousy election in 64, and it was only because of the loss of John F. Kennedy.
Well, I have to listen again. I don't know why she's saying her father ran on some ticket with... Well, maybe it was some ticket that, you know, they didn't get. I don't know, but check it out.
He might have been on the coattails. He might have been a lower position than vice president.
Oh, well, I'm not sure. But anyway, so it's StephanieMiller.com, but she's always, always talking about Cindy Sheehan. And really, you know, Cindy is one of those special, special people that shows us exactly what can be if we just let go of what was, which
right.
is well, far. Right,
well, actually, what's really nice about Cindy is that she's not a politician. That's what I love about Cindy. She's not a politician. I would like to promote the campaign right now. I'm on the inner circle. And we do have meetings every Tuesday at 6:30 at 1260 Mission Street, right between 8th and 9th in San Francisco. And everybody's welcome to join this campaign, to bring the anti-war vote to the Congress so that we can end the war on the very first day of the inauguration.
Sounds great to me. And, Mark, would you like to kind of get the show going as far as the end of it towards maybe sharing a poem that you would like to lead people to remember Mark Schwartz by?
Oh, okay.
That would be great.
Right. It's one of my signature pieces.
I
am a bench. Some people sit on me all day long. Some people sleep with me all night long. I have not been without injury. Several of my boards have been replaced. I am half wood and half aluminum. I sit still and watch the grass grow, and sometimes a dog will come over and occasionally piss on me. Therefore, I like the rain, but soon I'll get a paint job and see if you still recognize me. I am a bench. Some people sit on me all day long. Some people sleep with me all night long.
Mm. And what book is that in, Mark?
I don't know. It's in a couple of places.
That's
it's
all
in
right.
A couple of places.
That's really.
It might be in
the name
it's probably in not just my own, which was my first Vanity Press publication. It's also in an Awate Press journal that a couple of people did.
Well, and Mark, I hope you won't mind me asking one more time to give out your phone number, because that is where people can find exactly how to get your books.
Well, right now I'm at home at 415-543-1285. Should I be busy or out of the office? Call me at my voicemail, same area code, 267-3904.
And also, Mark's books, some of them, can be found City Lights Bookstore. And you can find that online, City Lights Bookstore, and also the Beat Museum. And I'm thinking,
right.
You know what would really be good to end this program with? We had Ray Charles, bass player, as a guest not too long ago, a couple of months. And Curtis Olsen, worked with him around the world for about seven
right.
years. But his song that I'm looking at is Ray Charles's You Don't Know Me. And you know what? I think we don't.
Yeah, well, listen to this.
Really
let me tell you a little bit of fact. Let me tell you a little bit. When Ronald Reagan died,
okay.
That's when Ray Charles died. I mean, when I was at Cornell, it was a whole week of Reagan. Ray Charles died on a Thursday. And all
uh-huh.
the news and all the whole day. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he died.
And then, get this. When who was the next Republican president died? I think it was Gerald Ford. And when
uh-huh.
Gerald Ford died, it was James Brown had died. So every time there's a great Republican president that dies, a soul brother dies. But let me tell you this. When George Bush dies, nobody's dying.
Nobody's dying.
Nobody's dying. Now, one soul brother will die under George Bush.
Not under George Bush. Well, you know, if anybody gets to North Beach in California, San Francisco, you can probably find Mark, if he's been allowed back in, City Lights The cat.
Let's not jump the gun yet. At the moment, should be in San Francisco tomorrow morning. Tomorrow, go to Balnechi, Philip Hackett, which is where we met, Joy. We met at Balnechi. Remember?
Balnechi.
It's at what's the street? Bannon Place and Green, right near Sardini's. Right near Sardini's. A great place. Italian family. Coffee and soy, $1. Beautiful pizza, beautiful cannelloni, pastries, Italian food. Great place. Balnechi in North Beach.
They're beautiful. Beautiful Italian family. They've got some Italian, like, restaurants there you would die for in North Beach. So when you come
another
to
place, them, another place I'm always hanging out at, beautiful service. I speak in Spanish to the workers. Puccini on Columbus near Vallejo. That's where I'm going. That's where I'll be tomorrow probably. Selling my books and rapping away and
Puccini.
Yeah, you know, I don't have any money,
the composer.
Give me a call. Wire me the money. Wire me the money. I guess you could. If I knew my routing number. If I knew my damn routing number, you could wire me the money. But
right.
I'll probably have to send it in the mail, you know.
Thanks, Mark. We all really enjoyed you. Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
And I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so, and anyone can tell. You think you know me well. You don't know me.
You don't know me.
You don't know the one who dreams of you at night, who longs to kiss your lips and long to hold you tight. Oh, I am just a friend. That's all I've ever been. You don't know me.
You don't know me.
I never knew the art of making love. Though my heart ached with love for you. Prayed and shine, and let my chance go by. A chance that you might love me too. You give your hand to me, and then you said goodbye. I watched you walk away beside that lucky guy. Oh, no, you'll never know the one. Chance go by, a chance that you might love me too. You give your hand to me, and then you say goodbye. I watched you walk away beside that lucky guy. Oh, no, you never know the one that loves you so. For you don't know me.
You don't know me. You don't know me.
Yes, and we will never know Mark Schwartz. He's enigmatic, and he's unique, and probably what I might say is a genius. We don't know geniuses of our time. They think in different ways, they see in different ways, they talk in different ways. So all I can say is thank you, Ray Charles, for putting it into music, You Don't Know Me. And I'm going to end this show, completely end this show tonight, with one of my favorite people. I've just met her. Her name is Joan Cartwright. Joan is a jazz musician, and she wrote many, many, many songs. And she sent me her book after we did an interview. I did an interview with Joan, and it's called In Pursuit of a Melody. And all I can say is go to my archives, Judy Joy Joan Show, and listen to the interview with Joan Cartwright. Check her out. Look her up on the internet. Joan has something in her that is going to stay around, some of her songs, her book, many, 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 many years. She's ahead of her time. So don't miss this one. She's got a heart bigger than her talent. She's a musical prodigy. And she has absolutely opened my heart. She's changed my life. And I am going to end the show with a song. It's not by Joan, but it's absolutely delightful. And she sings it, Don't Get Around Much Anymore. I love you.
Missed the Saturday dance. Heard they crowded the floor. Awfully different without you. Don't get around much anymore. Thought I'd go to the club. Got as far as the door. They would have asked me about you. Don't get around much anymore. Well, darling, I guess my mind's more at ease. But nevertheless, why stir up old memories? Been invited on dates. Might have gone, but what for? I couldn't bear it without you. Don't get around anymore.